Here's what's coming up on today's show.
So, you know, you buy insurance, there's a price to it, right? You got to pay for that protection. Well, if you put money in the bank, there's a price too. Right. You're going to generally get less long-term growth on that money, but it's the price you pay to have that protection in place.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brent Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Retirement Cafe. I'm Walter Storholt, filling in for Ben George this month, who is out on paternity leave. Congrats to Ben for welcoming new baby Emmett to the world. Very, very happy for him. Excited to join today Dan Reese and Brent Oliver, the great team, certified financial planners at Avery Wealth. And on today's program, guys, we're going to be talking about if you've ever wondered if you're putting enough money into the right places. And today we're going to discuss the hierarchy of savings vehicles to give you a roadmap for where to put your next dollar of savings. Very helpful conversation coming up on today's show. So Dan Reese, Brent Oliver, welcome to the show, guys. And to kick it off, why do you think it's so important of a topic to discuss today?
Well, we hear this question all the time, for one thing. And so before we get started, Dan and I both think it's just really important that you have a documented savings plan, that you understand where your money is going and why, to start off this conversation. So we would be failing you if we didn't say that first.
Yeah, and I mean, the truth is we see it all the time. This is kind of more complicated than what some people might think. Like, you know, Brent gives an example where people think, well, I'm saving 5% to my 401k, my wife's saving 5%, so we're saving 10%. You know, yeah. And it's like, okay, well, that's not exactly accurate, right? And so we want to talk about it because, number one, we want people to really understand what is your savings rate, right?
Yep.
And then, you know, also maybe kind of where it should be and what buckets to put money into. And the one thing that we always talk a little bit about is taxes, right? So we're going to kind of weave that into our discussion. But everything you do from your savings and investment plan should always, you know, you should always have taxes in mind, right?
Right, right. Yeah, that's going to be a big piece of this. And so we just want to start with, for retirement, we usually recommend that you're saving 15%, but it can vary, right?
Yep.
And it depends on how close you are to retirement, all kinds of different circumstances, but we're just going to talk at a high level today. And then, of course, you know, where should that money go? And that's what today is really about, is with that next dollar, where should I go next?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people just by default maybe put it into one particular account.
Yep.
And that may or may not be a good idea for you. So we want to give you a systematic way to go about making those decisions.
Yeah. And I think it's like a lot of things in life. If you're really not certain, you know, what a good, you know, place to go. And that's what we're going to try to cover today, is like kind of a stair step, right? Like, yeah, start here and then go here and then go there. So you have a road to run on, because so many times, like Brent was saying, things happen almost by default.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that default may be a good default, or it could be, well, I don't know what to do, and we've talked about this a lot on the show too. So what ends up happening a lot of times, you either do it by default or you do nothing at all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Well, I've maxed out this area, I'm done. Well, no, not necessarily. So we want to go through that. And then we want to take into account certain things, and Dan mentioned one of them was taxes, but you know, your priorities, mm-hmm, are going to determine where some of this money goes. How long until you need the money is another piece of it. And that goes along with, you know, if you have an immediate need for something, how liquid it is. And so we're going to talk about all those different things.
Yeah. I mean, everybody that doesn't have a plan, that's the thing that's so funny about this stuff. It's kind of like, I know you've probably heard us talk before, the kind of similarities between money and physical fitness. Like, even someone that wants to go work out every day, but if they don't really have a plan or way to do it, probably isn't going to get the best outcome, right?
Yeah, if you go to the gym or wherever you go to work out and you just kind of walk around and nothing ever happens while you're there, you probably didn't get the results you're hoping for.
Yes, yeah. Don't do just push-ups every day. Like, yeah, you got to do some cardio, got to get a mix and match.
Right.
But yep. Anyway, we hope this helps with everyone.
Is that a don't skip leg day kind of mentality yeah, there to yeah. financial you know, planning?
Yes. You know what's funny? I heard something the other day, like this guy was talking about how he hired this personal trainer and he's like, you know, I thought it was supposed to be, you know, upper body leg day. He goes, I feel like every day's leg day.
I love it. Yeah. Maybe retirement planning feels like that for some people.
Right.
Every day's leg day. Well, before we dive even deeper into the discussion, guys, if a listener isn't currently saving, is there anything they should do before they start, like a pre-savings checklist or anything like that?
Yeah, this is kind of that. Going back to the conversation you guys were just talking about, like consult your doctor first, right? Kind of statement. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you need to have a firm foundation, right? So we want to make sure that you're working from a budget, first of all, so that you understand where all your money's going. And then also, if you have a lot of debt, that really should prioritize, especially, you know, high interest credit card debt, student loan debt, different things like that. A lot of times that should prioritize these savings hierarchy that we're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the budget. So a lot of times people, that word makes people shudder.
Yeah.
You don't have to have this super detailed budget. I mean, you could literally look and say, okay, kind of what do I get deposited every month? Do I have money left? Do I not have money left? In general, where's that money going in broad categories? Because what happens is, it's interesting, there's two sides of this. There's the people that maybe, like we're talking about, maybe have some debt, and so they're running short each month, so they really need to pay close attention. But there's also people that have actually excess each month, and they get one of these scenarios where it's like they're saving on accident. What I mean by that is that their checking account or savings account just grows every month because they're bringing in more than they're spending, which is good,
yeah.
But at the same time, can be not very efficient. Right?
Yeah, it is a good problem to have, but it's that in itself is a problem,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's just losing opportunity, right? Yep. If you have way too much cash. And so, great point, Dan.
Well, I think, you know, there's not a lot of curse words in the financial world, but budget is definitely the B word, right?
Right.
Yes. Yes.
And maybe debt is the D word if we're turning the page to that. And I think anybody who's kind of been just dabbling in finance or just is living life has probably learned very quickly that debt can be very crippling and make it difficult to save. If you have a firm financial foundation and are ready to start saving, where do you begin?
Yeah, I think the first thing always for everyone is having that emergency savings. And, you know, we're going to talk about this, but one thing that I've noticed, I think Brent's seen this as well, the last few years, obviously, there's been zero interest to be had right at the bank. And now, of course, we've got an improving situation there. Online savings accounts, you're starting to see 4-4.5% at some of them. But this really made it even harder for people to put that emergency savings away because they felt like, oh, I'm not putting any more money in there. I'm not getting any interest.
Yeah, 0.01% interest that you'd get at the bank. And it's just like, oh my gosh, how can you even justify having several months worth of living expenses in an account like that? I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have done it.
Right.
It just makes it easier to do it now. And that's where this money should really be, is in like a high yield savings account, CDs, maybe things like that are good places for this money should be. So it's easily accessible, really liquid is the term that we would use, but we want to make sure that you can get at that money quickly because it's there for an emergency.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because, you know, I heard this is years ago. I think it was one of my certified financial planner classes. Like one of the instructors was kind of saying, hey, the thing with money, your emergency fund, it's like insurance. So, you know, you buy insurance, there's a price to it, right? You got to pay for that protection. Well, if you put money in the bank, there's a price too.
Right.
You're going to generally get less long-term growth on that money, but it's the price you pay to have that protection in place.
Yeah, because if you don't, where do you go?
Right.
You go right back to that debt, right?
Yeah.
And so that, you just don't want that to be the thing that always happens. Well, I got out of debt and now I'm back in it because I didn't do the next step that I needed to take.
Yeah, it's credit card city, right?
Yeah.
That's what usually ends up happening.
And so we have just some, we're not going to get real deep in the weeds on this because it's not the only point of this, is we want to get to the other areas where you should be saving. There is a downloadable PDF that's attached that shows you how much you should have in your emergency fund, depending on your household situation. And so there's some different things that impact that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things you look at is, are you a single income household or a dual income household, right? Because a lot of families nowadays, you see, you know, two people working and them both making pretty decent money. And if you ask them, like, well, we could survive on one income if we needed to, right?
Yeah.
So that would mean maybe you don't need quite as big of an emergency fund, right, Brent?
Yeah, so this the PDF that you have says maybe 3 months of your living expenses should be put away if you're in that situation. Obviously, if you're highly dependent on one income, that would change the circumstances, because if something happens to that income, you need more money. So it goes to 6 months, and then there's some other things. If you have a business, if you have a large family, right, you need to manipulate some of those numbers.
Well, I can comment, because my neighbors and I were talking the other day about our kids, and we're like, man, if we didn't have kids, you like look at that, going back to that B word, the budget, you're like, holy smokes.
Yes.
There it goes.
So if you do have, I mean, you have three kids, I have four kids. I mean, that's a big difference, right? And so you need to make sure you're accounting for that. And you could need, depending on your situation, up to a couple years.
Yeah, I knew a guy that used to very good with money, and he had a kind of a higher end job, like an executive type positions in companies. And he said, I always kept 2 years of expenses in the bank, because I knew that if I lost my job, you know, the old saying, what is that? For every $10,000 of income you earn, it's like a month to find a new job. There's some rules like that. And he was always like, that was prudent. Yeah. And, you know, he always was successful with money. So pretty good role model there.
Yeah. And I just talked with a client who had a situation, and they had made a choice to leave their job. And it's amazing how little stress somebody has in one of those transitions if they've done this.
Right.
Right. And it gives them, you talked about insurance, it gives them the ability to not take the first job that comes available.
Right.
It gives them the ability to make a really good decision for themselves and their future moving forward. It's just really powerful to have that insurance in place.
Well, these are all great points so far, guys. And so I'm curious, as we advance the conversation a little bit, you need somewhere between, it sounds like, 3 months to 2 years in that emergency fund, depending on the situation. But once you have that funded, where do we go to next?
Yeah, I think for most people, that's your retirement plan at work. And luckily, there's been some good legislation the last year or two that is helping more companies have retirement plans, because that was a hurdle for a lot of companies, especially smaller companies. But now more and more things are coming out to support that. And so that's the next place, right, Brent?
Yeah, and you want to start, okay? So this isn't where you stop, but we want to start at getting at least what the company matches.
Yes.
Right? So a pretty common one would be if you put in 5%, your employer would put in 4%.
Right.
And so if that's the case for you, it could be different, but find out what that match is and how much you have to put in. You want to make sure you're getting that match, because those are free dollars to you. And you're just leaving money on the table if you don't take advantage of that. So that's kind of where you want to start. And then we'll, as you'll see, we're going to circle back to this, because you may need to put more money in there, but that's the next place that you want to go with your money, with your dollars.
Well, great point, Brent. And do you just save enough in your retirement account to get the company match, or do you want to be saving even more into that account?
Yeah, I mean, eventually you may want to be saving more. We'll talk about that. But one of the things that's so important, you know, Brent, you hear the term diversification a lot, like diversification in investments, and don't put all your eggs in one basket. Well, there's something to that even with your savings plan, right?
Absolutely.
And so this hierarchy of savings is really helping you understand how to maximize your own savings, right?
Yes.
And so you have flexibility down the road, because one thing we know, every account type that's out there that you can save to, there's pros and cons. And there's also some restrictions sometimes, and sometimes those are good things, right?
Yeah.
But you got to keep all that in mind.
Yeah, and you're talking a lot about tax, right? And that's where we're going with this in the very next one. I think you'll see how, if you're listening, how that we're playing into taxes. This is just free money that's there and available. You have to get it, right? So that's why we're going there first. And then the diversification that Dan's talking about is going to be like diversifying tax buckets.
Right.
So yeah, we hit emergency fund, then it's, yeah, take advantage of that company match, but that seems to then open the door up next to lots of other options. So that, where do we go from there?
Yeah, and I think the next one is probably one of the most misunderstood opportunities that exists.
I totally agree.
You know, it's, no one really talks much about it, and probably one of the most powerful savings vehicles that the government has let us use, right?
For sure.
To this point.
And so what Dan's referring to is, and this is going to surprise some people, but is your health savings account is the next place you should go after you've received your company match, after you've put those dollars away to get that. This is the next place you should go.
Yeah, and so one of the things, you know, people think, well, yeah, I just put money in there and I take it right back out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, little newsflash, you don't have to do that.
Right.
You can put money in there and leave it. And so I just want to take a minute to help people understand the power of this. Most people are familiar with a pre-tax account at work. So like you put in, you know, we were just talking about maybe your employer plan, you have a pre-tax option. When you put that 5% in, you get a tax break when you put it in, right?
Yeah.
But what do we know? As that money grows and we eventually take it out, we pay income tax on the full amount, right?
Right.
So we had a tax break on the seed, if you will, and we paid taxes on the crop or the harvest at the end of the day.
Right.
What's different about a health savings account?
Well, you get a benefit up front, right? So it reduces your taxable income in the year that you make the contribution. If you invest it, it grows tax deferred. And then if you take it out for qualified medical expenses, it's a tax-free distribution. So really, there's no other account like this that exists, and that's why this is the next one that you need to fill up. And there's a couple of things that you have to do and make sure that you do before you can just fund this.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that, first of all, your health plan has to be qualified for this type of an account.
Correct.
Not everybody can do this, but if you have a high deductible plan, there's a pretty good likelihood that it's a health savings account eligible.
Yeah, right? And they usually, for most places you work, it'll say HSA plan or health savings account, you know, applies to this plan. So generally you're going to get a pretty good idea when you're signing up for benefits.
And then the next one is that Dan talked about this some, is that you need to reframe this money to long term,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can't put the money in and then take it out next month to because you went to the doctor, right? Because you're not really saving it then. You're just putting it in one pocket, taking out the other. It needs to be long term money.
Yeah, for sure. And I just to kind of like, a lot of people think, well, when will I ever use this, right? Well, one of the things that happens, two areas where it can be really powerful. If you retire before 65 and you have to buy health care from 62 to 65, you could have a lot of out-of-pocket expenses. Now, you can't use, before you're 65, you can't use health savings account money for premiums. Once you're 65 and on Medicare, you can, but you could then buy a high deductible plan, which is lower cost, and then you have the money to cover all those things, right?
Yep.
And then once you're 65, the average person, what do we figure, Brent, between everything, you might have, you know, $400 or $500 a month for healthcare, you know, your insurance and everything once you're on Medicare.
Yes.
Well, think about having a whole bucket of money that can pay for all that tax-free.
Right, right. And then the other one, which I know we've talked about on other episodes, is that you can save all of your receipts. It doesn't matter when. So if this year you go to the doctor and you are funding and have an established health savings account, in 15 years from now, you want to take the money out and repay yourself with that receipt, you can do it.
Which
right?
is amazing.
So you just keep funding this, and then you could use it for obviously other things then, right? If you've already paid the bill, hopefully you didn't wait 15 years to pay the bill.
Right.
You know, you're paying the bill now, and then you're keeping that receipt and you're taking the money out 15 years from now. Think of the growth. I mean, you'd just be pulling out growth at that point.
Right.
It's super,
awesome.
Super powerful.
Yeah. And just a couple of quick notes on that. For this year, you know, people that are eligible, individuals can put in $3,850 and families $7,750. And then this catch up, once you're 55, which is a little different than retirement accounts, but for the HSA, once you're 55, you can put an additional $1,000 in. So it really adds up.
Yeah.
And real quick note on this, actually, Brent and I just learned this today. In certain situations, because kids can stay on parents' health care till they're 26, if their parents have the HSA plan and the child is now independent, meaning they're not claimed on their parents, they're out on their own, in some of those circumstances, they can open their own HSA separate from their parents.
Right.
Which is very powerful.
And fully fund it.
And fully fund it, yes.
So both, you know, you and your child could fully fund it even if you're on the same insurance policy.
Oh, that's great.
Cool. Yeah.
A lot of ground covered so far. I mean, we've gone from emergency funds to getting your full match at work and now maxing out those HSA accounts or the health savings accounts. Where to after that?
So this is going to come down a little bit to priorities. So keep in mind, we always recommend that you're around that 15% for retirement, but families sometimes have other goals. So maybe education, different other housing needs, different things like that, that may be a priority to you over that. But we're going to talk about just your retirement income here. And so we want to go back maybe to your work plan, things like a Roth IRA or traditional IRA if you don't have a work plan. And then also if you have exceeded the limit, and we're going to talk a little bit about what this is, there's such a thing as a backdoor Roth contribution. So this would be the next area where you'd go back to.
Yeah, we're huge fans of Roth IRAs because, just to review that, I think we've talked about it a lot, but the idea is the money you put in, you've already paid taxes on. So I'm going to go back to that farming analogy with the seed and then the harvest or the crop. So with the Roth IRA, you're paying taxes on the seed, and then the harvest is generally tax-free as long as you fulfill all the rules. And so it can be very, very powerful. And so it's really good to have that as part of your savings plan. Again, to not only give yourself that tax-free money, but to diversify your savings buckets, right?
And so it's more and more common that your work plan will have this as an option. So you definitely want to look into, can I do Roth contributions into my 401k, for example, is a good place to look. Maybe you can't. And so that's when we would say maybe you should look at a Roth IRA if your income's not too high. And if your income is too high, then you can do a backdoor Roth contribution, which is basically just extra steps. We don't have to talk about what it is, but and we can offline, we can do that. Just give us a call and we can certainly help walk you through what that is. But you're just using an IRA to fund and then immediately converting it into a Roth.
Yeah, and that's something that you really have to be careful with. There are some pitfalls on that. So it's always good to talk with your accountant, talk with the certified financial planner, make sure you're not missing anything, because they can cause some challenges if you don't know what you're doing in that regard. But anyway, you can get money into a Roth.
Yep.
That's a good thing, generally speaking.
Right. And so then also we talked a little bit about priorities. So if education, you know, if that's on the horizon, you really need to get those dollars put away for your kids, this is another place where maybe you'd go to a 529, things like that. But we want to try to focus on that, putting that 15% away for retirement.
Yeah, and those 529s, like in recent legislation, has given more flexibility on those, and they continue to do that because, you know, I mean, the government understands the kind of the trouble that families are having financing college education, so they're putting more and more things in place. And one thing, you know, just a quick comment on 529s, because I've got a couple of kids in college. You know, a lot of people are like, well, I can't put much in there, so they don't do anything. I mean, I've seen clients walk in that started doing like $25 a month, $50 a month, and next thing you know, they had a year of college covered by the time their kid got there. Well, what would you do? Rather walk into college, you know, with $25,000 or $30,000 or zero?
Right.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Huge help. It's a great point. A great illustration. Every little bit helps. You're not going to regret saving those dollars, I don't think. So we've exhausted a lot of options already, guys. I mean, the work plans, the retirement accounts. Where should we look to save next? I'm sure you've got a few other areas we can look.
Yeah, I think something that more and more people are beginning to do are taxable accounts. So they're just, I think there's a lot of confusion around this because most people do have a high level understanding of like what a retirement account is, what an IRA is versus a 401k, but they don't maybe fully understand what a taxable account is, right?
Oh, I mean, I think when you, because they're, that's the other thing. I mean, our industry does a really good job of making things really confusing.
Right.
Right. So you'd hear this called like a brokerage account or an individual account or a joint account or a trust account. It's like, and you could go in any number of places, or even Dan or I would say those different things at different times, right? And so it can be really confusing. But think of it, these are just dollar, it's like money that's already in the bank, right? It's already been taxed and you're just going to invest it. The nice thing is that there's not any income limits. So all the other types of accounts we talked about, the HSAs and your 401k and Roth IRAs, they all have contribution limits.
Rules.
Right? Rules, right? Some of them have income limits. Some of them have withdrawal penalties and different things. This is just after-tax money. I'm going to put it into whatever type of an account, individual account, joint account, and invest it for the long term.
Yeah, and the way I always explain this to people is like, look, most people have a really good understanding of like a joint bank account. And I use the word joint or an individual bank account. So I go to my bank, I've got my checking account, my savings account. And if I asked you, hey, do you ever have any issues going and putting money in there, taking money out? And they're like, no, it's a bank account, dummy.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
you know, it's, you know.
Right.
And so if you earn any interest, you have to pay income tax on it. Oh, yeah, I get a 1099, like in January, how much interest I earn, and I got to put that on my return. Okay, well, that's very similar to it's just an investment account versus that bank account. So now you can buy things like stocks and bonds and mutual funds and all that other stuff outside of a retirement account. A lot of people really don't know you can even do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's very powerful because, you know, we've had countless examples where people are funding their, you know, retirement accounts, almost fully funding them. They're like, hey, I've got some extra money and my emergency fund's full. I'm doing the HSA. And it's amazing how much money they accumulate in those accounts over time, just with a systematic contribution to it. And it's liquid.
All right. Any other savings vehicles that should also be considered here?
Yeah, there is. And we're not going to get real far in the weeds on these. But after, you know, you've exhausted some of these, there are a few other places. So if you're a real high income earner, these might be a good place for you if you're trying to defer some growth, right? Mm-hmm. After tax contributions, some 401k plans allow for what's called after-tax contributions. And it's a good place where you can put your after-tax dollars and it just comes out of your paycheck, just like a regular 401k contribution.
Yeah, and then also non-qualified annuities, which is just an annuity, basically an insurance product that allows you to put away money and it grows tax-deferred. But like a retirement account, there's rules.
Yes.
So if you take it out before 59 and a half, the growth could have penalties and taxes. If you wait till after 59 and a half, the penalties generally go away, but you still have the growth is taxed as income, much like a savings account. Right. So you don't get the capital gains treatment. So there's pros and cons, like we said earlier, to every savings vehicle out there.
And you shouldn't be getting here until you're exhausting all those other areas.
Right.
And so that's a really important piece of this to keep in mind of.
Great information across the board today, guys. Can you give us kind of a little overview of some of the main takeaways and put this all in a nice nice bow wrapping for us here at the end of the episode?
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, you want to start with a firm financial foundation. So understand where your money is going and making sure that you don't have a lot of high interest debt. Consumer debt is kind of where you want to start with this. And then have a savings plan. Understand how much of your income is going towards savings and where you're going to put those. And you want to be very systematic about doing this because it can really impact your taxes now and in the future and it can really have a big impact on your success in the future. And that's why a lot of us are doing this. We do have handouts on both what's an appropriate emergency fund and the hierarchy of savings vehicles for your household. So it goes through each one of these step by step. We encourage you to download those, take a look at them, make sure that your savings plan is in line with that and that it's helping you achieve what's most important to you, as we always say. So, and we always, as always, recommend that you work with a qualified, certified financial planner. And please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan or I if you have any questions about this.
Again, the best ways to get in touch with Dan Reese and Brent Oliver, certified financial planners at Avery Wealth, 517-783-1695. The number to call, that's 517-783-1695. Or you can go online to averywealth.com. It's that easy, averywealth.com. You can also find that contact information in the description of today's show. Dan and Brent, thank you guys for walking us through this great conversation today, and we'll look forward to another good episode with you soon.
Sounds great. Right, thanks, Walter.
All right, thank you both. This has been another edition of the Retirement Cafe. Thanks for tuning in.
Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration as an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training, and the content of this communication has not been approved or verified by the SEC or by any state securities authority. The information contained in this podcast is intended to provide general information about Avery Wealth and its services. It is not intended to offer investment advice. Investment advice will only be given after a client engages our services by executing the appropriate investment services agreement. Information regarding investment products and services are provided solely to read about our investment philosophy and our strategy. You should not rely on any information provided on our website in making investment decisions. Market data, articles, and other content in this podcast are based on generally available information and are believed to be reliable. Avery Wealth does not guarantee the accuracy of the information contained in this podcast. Avery Wealth will provide all prospective clients with a copy of our current Form ADV Part 2A disclosure brochure prior to commencing an advisory relationship. However, at any time, you can view our current Form ADV Part 2A at advisorinfo.sec.gov. In addition, you can contact us to request a hard copy.